Hey, everybody. Extra fun and extra long episode of The Morning Show. We recap the action that the NFT space saw over the weekend, like a Blur bot being tricked to the tune of 800 Ethereum, the Little Lemon Friends acquisition, the winner of the weekend, Velocity Pass by Red Bull, and everything that Doodles has been rolling out. We then have a deep discussion with the sponsor of today's show, Tensor, and their Tensorians drop. We talk with the founding team about compressed NFTs on Solana and what they mean for the future of NFTs, all the builders in action that we're seeing on Solana, and their platform being the number one platform by volume for trading NFTs on Solana right now. So really juicy, really exciting stuff. It's a fantastic episode of the show. If you go to thenifty.com/claim and put in the password Tensor15, T-E-N-S-O-R-15, then you will claim the free NFT in partnership with Tensor. Hope you enjoy the show. I played Stevie Ray Vaughan because Easy went to Nashville, even though Stevie Ray Vaughan's from Texas and not Nashville. I don't know any Nashville musicians, quite frankly. I know that it's a big music place. How was the eating the hot wing down in Nashville, Easy?
Oh, it was awful. It was terrible. I wish I had a good answer for it, but this thing ruined my day. My tongue was swollen. My face was swollen. It was terrible. Like, there was just nothing fun about it. I was with Jux. I was with a few other people as well. And one of them made the pickle that just had like some of the powder on it from, it was a dry rub. So that even made it worse than like a sauce, 'cause it was just in the meat. They ate the pickle and they're like, yeah, no, I don't know what you're thinking. And I came in oddly confident. That was the worst part. I had a level of confidence about it. I was like, oh, I'll eat six. Like, I'm good to go. And I ate literally one wing. And I was proud of myself. It was a milestone victory, despite a very small one. I don't know how anybody wakes up and is like, you know, I want to go to this place. It's the hottest chicken wing in Nashville. I want to get the spiciest flavor and just ruin my life for the next 24 to 36 hours. Man vs. Food did it. They ate 3 out of 6 wings and they said, no, yeah, this is uncomfortable. This is uncomfortable.
And this was a contest. This wasn't just like, because Nashville is known for the hot chicken sandwich. If I had gone down, I would have absolutely been knocking down some hot chicken sandwiches. But I don't know if I'd participate in any, hey, this is the hottest wing in Nashville contest, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Here's a picture of it.
That's me before. I'm ready to go. So they let you prep and everything. So like, I was pulling the bones out. On top of this, like the dry rub being hot, the chicken meat was like fresh off the stove.
It almost like, been nice.
It was too hot. Like, I probably should have sat there for 20 minutes. And I was like looking at the rules. I was like, I could douse this in water. Just try to like cheat, you know. Somebody covered theirs in milk and ate 5 of them. But like there was one person there. He ate all 6 wings in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. His face was dripping sweat. His hands were convulsing, like shaking. And if you've ever eaten any like really, really, really hot food, you get like the hiccups, you know? And
sure. After 2 your body's bites, just responding. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, your body just immediately goes into shock. It's like, what the hell are you doing to me? I got the hiccups after 2 bites. I've like never been in a situation where I was like, and the thing is like the first couple bites, you're like, oh, this isn't too bad. And then your like taste buds start reacting and you're just like, oh, what did I just do?
Delayed reaction. Are you allowed to drink any like cheat drinks like milk or Coca-Cola or
any of the drinks? Bring any of it. Yeah, you can bring that. Someone brought like a grape soda and was slamming it like the whole time. And they ate 5. One person bought a 0.5 gallon of milk and they ate all 6 in 6 minutes. Like there was ways to do it. I came in with nothing. I just sat down, threw a bib on, and I was like, let's do this damn thing. clearly I wasn't prepared. I was like the second one to go to, and I had just watched the person eat 6 of them in 4.5 minutes. But like, I was like at watching this person eat them. I was like, oh, like this is doable, until I like looked at their hands on the last wing and they were like just going like this as they're trying to like their hands were literally convulsing as they were going to like eat it. Guy stands up after, he's like, yeah, it's a 6 out of 10 hot. I'm like, you're just lying to yourself. Like, I'm watching your face tear up, sweat and swell, and your hands are convulsing, and you're going to pretend that this is a 6 out of 10. Like, you don't have to pretend. I'm watching your body literally go into flight or fight mode right now over a piece of chicken meat. Like, yeah, it was crazy, but nah, absolutely electric event. I'm so like optimistic about these IRL events. And I think that this was hands down one of the better ones that I've been to. Concise plan for a weekend. It was great for a weekend event. Everyone who was there for the event was together throughout the entirety of it. There wasn't like many siloed community events at all, which I thought was really well done. So you end up just spending time with the 100-150 people who were there, which was absolutely awesome.
I'm pissed I didn't go. I think the thing that really kicked the FOMO in where I should have gone was when I found out the UFC event was there that night, and you and me would have 1,000% gotten tickets and been like five rows back at the UFC event. But then the UFC event's main event, the Sandhagen fight, was not good. So I was like, all right, well, we would have been really disappointed if we went to that. But regardless, that whole going through that whole thing made me realize, because we kind of took a stand this year because we went to too many in real life events last year and kind of took a stand that was like, hey, we're not going to be going to in real life events like that this year because they're not as productive as some people I think they are. You know, obviously there is a case to be made about in real life stuff, but then thinking about this particular one, thinking about the fact that the dogs are on Solana, I was like, oh no, we need to be going to these. Is the next one Breakpoint, which obviously we're having an event at Breakpoint. Okay. So that's the next one. You gotta let me know what the next one is after that. But it sounds like overall it was a good time.
Yeah, I was like I said, I was really, really surprised with how well it was put on and ran. So shout out Rove World. They do like ticketing for a lot of events too at NFT NYC. They did a bunch of them. I was very impressed, and I made comments to their team about how well it was organized and just what a good job they did for like a 3-day itinerary that didn't feel overwhelming and was just like great. Like Friday night they had like a bar crawl that was close to the hotel, so everyone was just there like together. The next night they did the next day was a scavenger hunt they rented out like one floor of this 4-story bar, which was awesome. And it was right on Broadway, which is like the popular street there. And that was the thing, was we didn't realize how close the UFC event was going to be to that event. They were right next door, and UFC ended at like 10. So it would have been like a perfect time to like hit that, walk over. But it was awesome. And then Sunday they had like the Magic Eden picnic that Magic Eden had sponsored. It was just like a nice little send off with a bunch of tables from projects that had sponsored and partnered tables and stuff. It was awesome. I'm not going to lie. Like I had a really, really good time and saw a bunch of holders. We had some limited merch there. People were so excited to get those hats. I had people coming up after the fact trying to get more. It was really, really well done. And it's
awesome. Oh, I didn't even think of that. I didn't even think that people like the hats.
They went crazy over them. Like when I was handing them out, it was all dog holders that I saw got them. A few people who are really active in the Discord. Shout out this guy, McChillin, who drove 10 hours from Dallas to come to the event, which is so cool to see. Guapo, the mod in the Bodega Discord, he was there. First time I met him in person. And just like a bunch of the people who are really active in the community got them and were just so genuinely happy, which is such a cool feeling to see when like you have something that's limited that gets people excited and they really lean into it and just are part of it. So
did you bring
Amsterdam? Did you? Yeah, the Polaroid camera, they all have their pictures.
Go. Easy did the thing I wanted him to do. Yes.
Whole thing. And the comments on that were great because like we did outline what the floor price of the dogs was on it with a date and what hat number I gave out. So people were like, this is badass because in a year I'm going to be hyped to look at this and be like, shit, like this is so cool. First merch item we had, it was the Bodogos logo from the PFP page of the actual Twitter account with a cowboy hat on it. The cowboy hat has a little bone. So I'm excited to keep doing stuff like that, really limited run stuff that's hyper tailored. So stay tuned for Amsterdam. We're going to have some fun stuff out there.
Hell yeah. Physical products gets me super duper excited. I love hearing that it went according to plan. Real quick. Oh, there's Tig. Oh, let's go. Yes. Yeah. Clemente has it pulled up with Tig. Wow. Hell yeah. That's so awesome. I'm pumped that we executed the way we wanted to. Oh, Bunny's over here commenting. Bunny wrote, bro. Bunny, do you want some Bodogos merch?
He's messaged me every day about it.
Bunny. All right. Okay, he's getting...
Yeah, of course I want the merch. Dude, you caught me at a bad time, man. I was throwing bacon on the pan. My hands were slimy, dude. I hate that.
Well, Bunny, it's no problem. We'll give you all the Bodogos merch that you want as soon as you change your profile picture to a Bodogo. All right, buddy?
Okay, I don't need merch.
Real quick...
I need merch.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Sig, you're going to get all of it. Real quick, Sig... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, the fact that there's people in Nashville who have the merch before I do. Thanks, EZ. I've been listening to Deep Sea Jellyfish or whatever since 2021. You can't even throw me a hat over here. But I need one with a Bodogo. Get me one.
Well, it was the first distribution of any physical products, and there will be many more. It's very, very exciting. And they'll be distributed, you know, on the website, too. You won't have to be at in-real-life events. Real quick, back to the spicy stuff. Sig, do you enjoy spicy food? Because for people that are just tuning in, EZ was just telling us about a contest he did in Nashville this weekend. Solana had a notable event in Nashville. Easy Went represented the Nifty, represented the dogs, and did this hot wing contest. Sounds like it was quite the miserable experience, which I can't say that I'm surprised at. Sig, you're not a big into the spice?
No, I can't do it, man. I just can't handle it. I always have to have my my bottle of Coca-Cola next to me just so I can be drinking it. And then every time I go to like an Indian restaurant, whatever, even if it has like one chili out of three, I like put in my order and say, can you tell the chef to make it like zero chili? And then when it comes, that's my perfect like temperature. But I can't handle it. So shout out to you, Easy, for being able to do even one extra hot, spicy, hot chicken wing.
Well, it sounds like he barely was able to do it. On Saturday night, I was at a Thai restaurant, pretty dope spot called Kru, K-R-U. Didn't know about it, but it's apparently got a lot of hype. And I didn't expect them to really come correct with the spice because there's only one Thai place in New York called Ugly Baby that actually does do intensely spicy Thai food, like authentically spicy Thai food. But I got the beef tongue curry on Saturday night, and I was like, oh, okay, I should have been mentally prepared for an actual spice experience. So it looks like we were both spicing up on Saturday. Easy, much worse. Look, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to get into the meat and potatoes of the show. We have a lot to talk about. There was an acquisition in the NFT space. Those are always interesting. There was a person that was running a bot that got tricked and lost a bunch of money. So those are always quick stories, but fun stories. There was actually a win this weekend, the Velocity Pass by Red Bull. So we'll talk about that. We'll dig into the state of the market. But of course, we also have a very, very dope sponsor for today, Tensor. Tensor already being the number one NFT marketplace by volume on Solana, trusted by both retail collectors and advanced traders. So you know that the platform is dope because it has both sides of the market. It's backed by big names in crypto like Placeholder, Solana Ventures, Alliance DAO, and Solana's co-founders, Anatoly and Raj. And the mission of Tensor is really to explore Solana's unique design space for NFTs. So they're dropping the Tensorians NFT today, which is a collection focused on developing their overarching brand as they connect deeply with their community. The goal is to create a fun, creative, and diverse NFT ecosystem on Solana. The artwork, Clemente has it pulled up on the YouTube show right now, and it's dope. It's pixel art, well-executed pixel art, very NFT native stuff. It looks really dope. I'm pretty pumped about it, just seeing the artwork ahead of the drop. Owning a Tensorian grants you premium access to Tensor's pro trading product with exclusive rewards, faster feature access, and unique chat rooms with other traders. So we have the Tensor account on stage. We also have two of the people from the team, Richard and Ilya, that I'm very excited to talk about the drop with. If you are, you know, kind of like segmented in the NFT space, you stay on ETH, you're not that familiar with Solana, this is a great opportunity for you to learn about a dope drop on Solana from the number one platform by volume. I repeat, the number one platform by volume on Solana. So it's very, very exciting for us. We're super pumped, quite frankly, honored to have them sponsoring the show today. And it's going to be a lot of fun to dive in. We've just been really excited in general to see the people building on Solana. And when I have conversations with people that are building on Ethereum, you know, like the few builders left that are on Ethereum, they'll ask me questions like, what do you think about the current state of NFTs? Like, what do you think about where we're at in the market? And I say, you know, what I'm really excited about is Solana. And I'm excited because everybody that I talk to that's building on Solana is like young, hungry, doesn't feel like they're, you know, really being negatively or they're not wavering because of the market conditions. And I don't know, it's just a really exciting place to be building right now. I'm thrilled that the Bodagos and our platform are really focused on building on Solana right now and integrating the existing infrastructure from ETH onto it too. It's a jam. So to talk to some legit builders from Solana today will be a lot of fun. So let's get into the weather report with Sig, Monday, August 7th. Let's party.
Yeah, morning guys, GMGM, Monday, August 7th. Weekend volume coming in under 10 million at 8.7, Blur at 5.5, OpenSea at 2.5. So numbers are looking pretty tame for mid-August, but to be expected. Onto leaders, not much change on what's happening there. You got Apes at 29.1, Mutant still holding 5.6, Punks just hovering around that 50 ETH range. You got Degold holding 9.1, just the expectations. Frank is building and doing the tour there. Azuki hovering under 5 at 4.9. Captains hasn't done much, still hovering at 4.6, and Pudgy's just holding that 4.1 ETH floor. Over the weekend, well, Animoca Brands chairman Yatsu announced that he wants to have he announced a Rec League mint will be in ApeCoin, and to kick off the game's release, he wants to hold a Rec League tournament, which is going to have his personal prize pool of valuable NFTs coming from him. So we should look out for that when it happens. On to Velocity Pass by Red Bull. Well, they're facing FUD after the fourth artist was incorrectly named on the mint site as Rafik Anadol. A mistake was made, which led to people FOMOing and buying much higher on secondary. It was a 990 supply, 0.3 ETH mint, and it's now trading at 0.88. So that was one of the winners over the weekend. On to the biggest sales. Well, one of the biggest sales over the weekend went to collector Batsoup Yum, who bought Sam Sprat Skull for 15 ETH. That is a lot, but an absolute bargain if you think about how much some of these recent Skull sales have been. They've been in the 60 ETH range. He sniped it off Super Rare, so somebody didn't see the somebody didn't know about the highest sales happening over on OpenSea. And then lastly, last week Bieber bought a clown CryptoPunk, and on the weekend announced an exclusive free CryptoPunks event at Bieber Studios in Charleston, happening on Saturday the 30th of March. On to crypto, BTC at 29, Ethan at sort of 1833, Solana at 23, and Ape at 1.8. All of crypto just sort of hovering around these support lines, going to be chopping, it looks like, maybe for the rest of August. But so for now, as we come out the weekend, is going to be calm skies. Back to you in the studio.
Fantastic weather report as usual, Signal. I love that story about the Sam Sprat Skull selling for 15 ETH. Just reading about that one, it was because the collector, I think, is not super duper into the NFT space and only checked the sales activity on Super Rare, which is where he was able to claim it, or it was like something where it wasn't that hard to get the initial skulls because it was so early that I think you just had to put a bid in. And I don't think it was that much money. I think it was like 0.2 ETH that he put the bid in for, and he was able to get the skull for that low price. Then he checked the sales on Super Rare, and I believe the highest sale on Super Rare was 10 Ethereum. So to him, he was like, I'll list it at 15. Maybe it'll go. Little did he know these things sell for like 70 on OpenSea or you know, other platforms. So it goes to show the segmentation of the NFT space. And I mean, if there's anything that I've noticed for years, there's real, real segmentation, like big time segmentation. And if anything, I feel like for the space to get healthier, we need to remove that segmentation, because it doesn't make sense for somebody to be like dominating on AVAX, you know, and then nobody on Solana or on ETH knows who they are. So it doesn't make sense for people to be big on Super Rare and nobody in the rest of the space knows who they are. Moving on to updates from the Nifty Daily Digest, which is the daily newsletter. You can subscribe at thenifty.com. You need to have an account at thenifty.com to claim today's free NFT. So make sure you go to it. thenifty.com. Make an account. Get ready for the free NFT drop later on in the show. Anyway, Doodles announced an upcoming drop in collaboration with the popular footwear brand Crocs, set to launch in August 2023. I think that an announcement like that in early 2022 would have caused a big pump. I saw people pointing out that there were barely any sales. That's the current state of the NFT market. Brand partnerships are not really valued on the secondary market. Little Lemon Friends, the NFT collection that minted in December 2021, speaking of being a little bit early, has announced its acquisition with full details to be released within 4 weeks or less. I'll be very curious to see what these acquisitions look like, how they play out, whether one entity buys multiple, and really what the spirit and the motivation is behind buying these 2021 and 2022 projects. I think it'll be very interesting. A Blur Point farmer, Hanwei, I think I'm pronouncing that right. Actually, I have no idea, manipulated a Blur farming bot to place trait bids significantly higher than their actual value, resulting in a profit of over 800 ETH. I think we'll touch upon this. It's a interesting little story for all the traders out there. We won't spend too much time on it. Last but not least, Grails Season 4 by Proof commences its mint today at 11 a.m. Eastern time, offering holders a three-day window to choose the art they wish to redeem their pass for, followed by the reveal of the 20 artists behind the artwork. So I've talked about this on the show
show before. I think it's a really cool and fun technique that Grails and Proof have been doing time and time again, which is you pick the art, but you don't know the artist. And it makes a fun experience for the artist, right? Because they can choose to be like obvious with their art. Like I remember when Grant Yun did his Grails drop, it was pretty obvious that it was Grant Yun. Or they can choose to be not so obvious. And I remember Snowfro did a piece that was not so obvious. And then, you know, the people that ended up buying that one afterwards, you know, saw a lot of price appreciation because everyone was like, oh shit, that one's Snowfro. So a lot of fun when the Grails collections drop. I think it's one of the coolest mechanics that comes out of the Proof camp. So it'll be interesting to see how juicy the secondary is for that after the fact. Maybe we'll have Node come on this week and see what he thinks about it. Those are your updates from the Nifty Daily Digest. Again, subscribe at thenifty.com. So quick topic. Everyone's kind of talked about this, but we'll just quickly touch on it. Azuki's Blurbot was tricked, or an Azuki Blurbot, I should say, was tricked. Someone made 800 ETH in profit. Easy, you want to give us a quick breakdown of what the story is with this thing?
Yeah, so on Blur, you get a lot of situations where it's people just Blur farming point-wise. So bots and bids, market-making style of approaches where people are automating a lot of that to just try to get as many points as possible. And when people find very both profitable and high point yielding farmers, they set up bots and contracts and operations that just tail those users and will either bid slightly under them or slightly over them to try in an effort to like front run them basically, or yield like off the back end of their points or not get sold into. So what happened was this person had noticed that every time they placed a bid, this pseudo bid would come in behind them. And every time they delisted, it would take a few moments before that user would delist. So what they did was they went out, fired off a way too high bid on specific NFTs that either they owned or may have. I mean, I don't think it was a floor bid because there was very specific ones and only one person ate on it. And this bot,
it was trade bidding. It was trade specific.
So and I think so it was that holder who bid on their own specific ones that had these trades. And what happened was these people ended up going into it and then followed it. And that was kind of the most interesting thing to me was you saw this sentiment where they put these bids in, people tailed those bids, and then they sold into them. So basically just completely tricked the bot to copy and spoof bid only to then move on, take those wins, get the person's liquidity, drain the bot. And then the bot came out, the person who had it, and was like, we'll let you keep 10% of it, but we want the rest of the money back. Are you open to negotiations and conversations? And it had some drama all over the timeline. Because people are like, is this ethical? Is this stealing? Is this scamming? And it was like, I think it's ethical. I think it was fine. They played the game better than the bot.
Yeah, this is not a scam. This is just PvP in the market. A scam is a bajillion other things that we've seen in the NFT and crypto space over time. So that's that little story. We don't need to dive in too much deeper. Another quick story. Winner of the weekend, Velocity Pass by Red Bull. 1,000 NFTs were sold for 0.3 Ethereum each with Bybit. And now that's up to 0.9 ETH. Featured artists are Snowfro, Perkwork, and others. There was this is what Signal pointed out in the weather report is that they falsely named Rafik Anadol as the fourth artist, but that was not true. And fun fact, you did have to KYC in order to mint this collection. Easy, what do you make of this win?
So I missed this completely, like entirely. But it seemed like it was like the big winner right now. So I don't know how I totally missed it. I saw a few people talking about it. I wish I got into it because it's like kind of wild to see a play like that just completely run. I mean, Rafik Anadol's well-known artist. Has a ton of pieces in the digital realm that have done really, really well. So it's not surprising. I think it's pretty awesome at this collaboration. And it's always good to see a win in the NFT space when it's extremely quiet like it is.
Yeah. And I mean, Spencer was pointing out that there are isolated W's. He was talking about that art drop last week, which I totally would have bought if it had been on my radar. It feels obvious, although it was a Dutch auction. It's kind of harder. It's higher stakes. I see Nifty Nick has joined in the green room, so to speak, but I don't know if he's ready to come on camera yet. I'll be very interested. He looks good. Let me tell you. Oh, there he is. Look at that. He left. He left real quick. He's not ready to come on. He's still in hair and makeup, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, here he is. What up, Nicky boy? It's leaving again.
I was just saying I wasn't ready.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. You doing well, buddy?
I am doing well. Had a really good weekend.
Hell yeah.
I missed that on the Rafique Anadol story there, though. I was just listening. I was paying attention to what you all were discussing. Clemente, where are you located, actually? Are you on, like, vacation or something?
No, I'm at my parents' place before. I just moved out of my apartment. So I'm with my parents for 2 days before heading out.
Before he moves to New York.
Oh, nice. Well, that's very exciting. Yeah, I had a really good weekend. I went to the beach on Saturday. Yesterday, I had an experience, which, you know, I don't know if I really want to share on this show. I went to a happy ending massage place. And this was by accident. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Me too.
Let me explain to you what went on. I was not a recipient of, but just in case you're wondering, that's the moral of the story before we jump in exactly to what went down here. But yesterday we were riding around on my e-bike, my girlfriend and myself, and we were just kind of rolling around New York. And at one point my girlfriend was like, "Hey, you want to go get a massage?" And I was like, "Yeah, I guess." So she was like, "Oh, there's this place I know. It's in, it's not Lower East Side. It's probably East Village or something like that, I would say." So we go over there. And first of all, the massages are very cheap. But what started being weird, science showed up pretty quickly that something was off with this place. So first of all, I go into the massage room and I didn't realize I was turned around backwards on the massage table. I figured for like the 45 minute massage, which costs like $60 or something like that, or no, way less. I think it was like $45. I figured it was going to be one of those like chairs that you sit in and they just like work on your back, mm-hmm, sort of thing.
Fake massage.
Exactly. I thought it was going to be one of those. And I was like, I guess I'll go get a fake massage. But no, it was like a full massage. So I get on the table. The woman's like, "Oh, take off shirt." And I take off because I didn't know that it was a regular thing. And now she tells me that I should take off my shorts, but I'm wearing like a bathing suit. And I'm like, "Ah, I'm good." And so I lay down on the thing. She just rips my shorts off, basically. And I'm just like naked in front of her. I'm like, what the hell? Like, basically, I'm like laying on a thing and I'm like, "Okay, well, that was interesting," to say the least. So then she puts a towel over me and I'm like, "Okay, I guess she sees my butt, whatever, but like, this is all good." Next thing, after giving me an initial massage, which I would say did not feel professional at all, yeah, it's literally just like hard presses of hands, but it didn't feel like there was any technique.
It was just for show. It was just for show.
It just felt like there was pressure. And I'm just like, okay, interesting. She then jumps on top and is literally straddling me over top of me on this, whatever you call it, thing. And I'm like never experienced
what is the age of this woman? Is this an old 50 plus?
She was older, yeah.
Oh boy.
I mean, maybe she needed that in order to have the proper pressure technique, but I've never had a woman standing on top of me on the bed and like different angles, but like all directions basically. And then later, I'm not going to get into the details here, although I've already gotten pretty detailed. She's massaging my back at one point and then just pulls the towel down. So my butt is just fully exposed at this point in time. And I mean, pretty much you can see anything. And I'm just like, I'm feeling uncomfortable basically at this moment.
Well, you innocently went for just like an actual athletic massage and you're getting a whole lot more, buddy.
And yeah, I was just like, I was like, this woman's getting like a peep show essentially at this point. So I'm just like, I guess I'll just roll with it. But she got a little, very, she was more than close with her hands at one point. And then when the thing ended, she was like 45 minutes over, turnover 15 more minutes. And I was like, no, I'm good. I was like, sorry, I'm confused. And she like put her hand down and she's like, I help you here, essentially. And I'm just like,
this is in East Village in Lower East Side. Thought you had to go out to Astoria for this stuff.
No, East Village. I don't know what the deal was, but when we left, so I'm like, no, I'm good. My girlfriend's like, well, I'm meeting out. She's like, oh, and like jumps out of the room. So I got ready. I leave. And I asked my girlfriend, I was like, hey, did that guy like touch you very, like very high on your leg? And I was like, did he take off your underwear? and she was like, no. And she was like talking about the leg. I was like, when we get back to the apartment, I had already said, I was like, I'm pretty convinced that woman was like trying to do more. By the time we got back to my place, when we were going up to the apartment, I was like, did he jump on top of you at any point? And she's like, yeah, totally. And I was like, really? She's like, no, who the hell would do that? I was like, well, this woman literally jumped on top of me in multiple directions. And it's like literally – anyway, she was shocked and she couldn't believe it.
Well, I mean, that's a hell of a story, Nick. I am very entertained by the fact that happened to you. Real quick, Melissa Mimosa, longtime listener of the show, friend of the show, said that she ended up dating her masseuse once. It was pretty awesome until she found out he was married. So it seems like these masseuses are out here doing questionable things left and right. That was really funny. Other commenters are weighing in saying that Clemente is super excited to move to New York City. Clemente is moving to the East Village, Lower East Side area. So it sounds like
I'll give you the spot, dude, and I'll tell you the woman.
He'll be a stone's throw away from having this 50-plus-year-old woman jump on him during
literally
a massage.
Jumping off the wall all over the place. I mean, she's just like, she's very talented. I thought I was about to get robbed or something. Like, I didn't know what was going on. I was like, is this place... Like, there were a lot of questions going through my mind at this.
It sounds like it might not be above board. But
the rest of it, but everywhere else was totally normal. But there were, I don't want to, like, there were weird noises. There were other things coming around. Like, and I'm just like, I don't think I want to go to that place again.
Biggs, friend of the show, fellow New Yorker, said, I owned one of those spots, LOL. So Biggs engaging in some questionable entrepreneurship, if I could describe it as such.
I mean, it wouldn't be shocking if someone in the NFT space owned one of those places. That's how they funded their CryptoPunk purchase. and then acted holier than thou, basically, is what happened. They were like, oh, yes, I'm a fine collector of art, own a CryptoPunk, and I own 10 happy ending massage places, basically.
Sneaker Dad weighed in. Haven't heard from Sneaker Dad in a while. Hoping he's been watching and just not commenting. He said, going to onboard this woman in a crypto Web3 with Clemente's entire salary probably going to this parlor. Now we know where...
Clemente's just a dirty dog, dude. What the hell is going on? Clemente, you are gross, man.
He's a salty dog.
You are gross. You would just go hang out at this place and spend your whole salary there? That's ridiculous.
Well, I will say that you said you had a really good weekend before you told these stories, Nick. Very interesting stuff. Fun fact... Well,
I didn't include... So here's a little something else. It turns out I was high also, so didn't know that was coming.
Did you accidentally eat marijuana-infused edibles?
Drink, yeah.
Okay.
It was a minimal amount. It was pretty good. Highly recommended it, although I read their business is going out of business. It's called Cann, C-A-N-N, and apparently they're really underperforming. I forget the celebrity that owns Cann. Is it the woman that owns Goop? Gwyneth Paltrow. Yes, it is Gwyneth Paltrow backed. Apparently, non-celebrity brands bring under $27,000 per month, compared with Cannes, which is making more than $750,000 a month.
There's a couple comments I'm not going to read on the show, but they're super funny. Specifically, Estuardo is how I think that his name...
Pia's out of here. Okay, so actually this girl that I went with to the beach on Saturday was Spanish, and I was telling her that...
Miguel Ribeiro?
Yeah, I was telling her about your pronunciation of Juan, and I said Wong Kong.
No, it's Juan.
Yeah. Okay.
One of our employees... never mind. Anyway, go ahead.
So that one's pretty funny, actually. I think it's I think it's pretty good. It was an interesting day. Let's just say that. Yet, I was feeling pretty chill. Like
sounds like a chill day. Well, you are in a very good mood. And when I asked you how your weekend was, you said it was really good. Like, just so people in the audience know, most people, when you ask how they're doing, how their weekend was, the overwhelming answer, I feel like, from a percentage standpoint is, it's going really good. Yeah, it was a good week. It was good. Nick almost always goes, it was all right. Almost like he's a little offended that you asked him how he was doing. He's like, it was all right.
It's because you're asking it on the show. The distinction is, like, if someone asked me off the show, that question hits different. But it just has to do with that the context of that conversation. But I think this commenter is spot on as well. Easy secretly didn't talk about the happy ending place that he went to in Tennessee. Away from his
Nick, no, it was way crazier. I did street interviews with people on Broadway, and some of the responses make your weekend seem exceptionally chill. I'll tell you that much, because we asked
what do you mean people on Broadway?
So Broadway's like the main street in Nashville where all the bars are, and it's
your voice is not doing well. Yeah, so were you partying?
Yeah, no, I did karaoke and I did Evanescence, Bring Me Back to Life, and I did the male part, which is like, wake me up inside. I really leaned into it too. Like, really. And like, when the drop happened, I just went all in. It was for like part of this challenge that we did. And we were doing these street interviews. My personal favorite one was I was interviewing these people, and it was like 11:30, maybe midnight. So people had been active. They closed the street down completely. So people are just walking in the middle of the street. And I asked, like, what is one crypto besides Bitcoin that you know? 95% of people say Dogecoin. So I'm severely underexposed to Doge, plain and simple. Like, that's the consensus I've had.
I did buy some. The normies seem to love that doggy coin.
Yeah,
that's the only one they know. But one question I was asking was, what's a hidden talent you have that nobody knows? And this woman, who was like really excited to answer it, just goes, I commit tax fraud. And just like chuckled. I was like, what? Like, with confidence. I was like, that is crazy. Okay, and then we did get one person who was like completely just like really hammered, and they were talking, and I asked that first question. That's normally how I started, and was like, what's one crypto you know? The guy knew. He went off. He was like, Ethereum, Tezos, Solana.
Tezos.
And I said Tezos. And then when he said Solana, I was with a bunch of Solana people, so we started cheering. And he's like, I may be drunk, but I'm not an idiot. And then I was like, okay, fair enough. And then I was like, what's one secret you have that your parents don't know? And he goes, well, I engage in a lot of group activities. I was like, what do you mean by that? He's like, well, they're the adult ones. And I was like, what?
The Nashville people are getting loose.
Easy acted like he doesn't know. He's like, what? Sorry, a group adult activities?
He's talking about sex, Easy.
I was like, how many of these have you been involved in? He's like, turn the camera off and I'll tell you. Like, oh, damn. Okay. So yeah, we had some really funny responses.
Well, are you going to tell us what it was? So what did he just have group sex? Like, is that
multiple.
Sorry. What you say multiple. Can you expand on what
he
that
engages
means?
In a lot of orgies is the verbatim in which he stated was that he's really into orgies was what he was.
Was he an attractive guy?
I would say no. He was actually a little older. Like, he was probably like 55. Like, he was wearing a cowboy hat, cowboy boots. But he was just really excited to share that in a very minimal detail. So that
on
was,
camera.
Yeah. On camera. Yeah.
I think he's just living a good life. I appreciate that.
Well, I can't wait to see the clips. It sounds like there's going to be some fun stuff coming out of Easy's Nashville trip. Hopefully the YouTube audience appreciates it in the form of shorts. Now, and people are weighing in. Clemente wants to move to Tennessee instead now. So it seems that was Ways of Wong that just weighed in with that one. And yeah, that was a pretty good comment there from Ways of Wong. Anyway, real quick, Nick, we have a couple of segments here that are engineered for you. Obviously, you've come in hot on the show thus far. We just to give you context, do you remember the collection Little Lemon Friends, Nick?
Yes.
Little Lemon Friends has been acquired. So they minted in December 2021. They reached an all-time high of 0.7 Ethereum. There was an announcement recently that the Little Lemon Friends collection will be acquired, with the new team taking over 4 weeks from now. The floor ran from 0.015 to 0.07. So this is an RNA example that, you know, we've talked about RNAs before on this show. And so I'm wondering to you, what is the value of acquiring a collection like this that's largely been irrelevant in the last few months? And why does the market, you know, have a positive response to these acquisitions? I think this is something that would be worth discussing with Spencer also, but I'm curious what you think.
Well, first of all, is it public who acquired it?
Not yet. It'll be fully announced. They're finalizing everything within the next 4 weeks. The new team will be announced and they'll take over the project.
Okay, so it's a lie. So so you all just fell for the
prank. Do you think it's really a lie?
You all just got manipulated into pumping this floor 7x and said, yeah, this is for real. I mean, there are a lot of people tweeting about it. I'm looking at this, but there's not many tweets since I see July 4th. Well, I mean, like, were they really struggling for like art? That they couldn't come up with a lemon on a head? Like, I don't know. This isn't exactly like rocket science. Stay tuned. I mean, congratulations to Little Lemon Friends. You know? Why now? Like, I guess I don't know what the, like, how long has it been since there was activity? It is interesting, though. There has been activity in terms of sales on the project. The most volume was back on April 16th. What happened there? Like, was that another, like, false acquisition rumor?
Maybe an insider pump, because that was when conversations started, and it took a couple months to iron everything out and get it to close.
I mean, the average price at that point was one ETH. But before this rumor occurred, there was not that many. I don't know, man. Like, what is this project about that makes them worth acquiring, other than like PFP art? It says, what are they? It's just a collection, each with their own lemon of adventures. I mean, literally, so why buy a lemon? The lemon map. This is like a throwback. You should pull up this website, Clemente.
Because it's like a time capsule of 2021 NFT promises.
Exactly. 60% back into the project. How kind of them. So 40%
straight to their pockets.
Went straight to their pockets. After accounting for taxes, will be dedicated to help fund the project's future development, such as various items on the roadmap. That's one of the roadmap items, is the amount that's going back. Artist collaborations and events. There will be regular style airdrops. Wasn't there another? There was another lemon project that was actually good, right?
No, I think this was it. This is the lemon.
Yeah, these reds.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking of Alien Friends is what I was thinking of. Pixel, those came out around similar times, but had two different execution abilities. Pixel lemons. Each lemon has integrated animated pixel versions of itself. So I did see that on the timeline. So they got pixelated versions of their NFTs. Okay. Ongoing things on the side, such as lemon merch. Oh, there's 3D lemon avatars for the metaverse. Very
bullish
on that.
That's a throwback. Yep.
That's a sandbox utility there. Remember how all of us were playing in Sandbox like in 2021?
Spending all of our time there.
We were just all hanging out in Sandbox. Those were the days. And then roadmap item World Domination. And it's all three anonymous founders. Sonerius is one of them. Oh, he follows me. I'll follow him back. Congrats on the acquisition. Ribbit is his last.
Anyway, in all seriousness, Nick, do you think that this is going to keep happening? Do you think that there's, like, if you had to squint and put this under a microscope, is there any value you could see from a business perspective? Like, why would somebody do this? Obviously, we have seen a successful example, Pudgy Penguins, Luka Nets, right? That's a successful example. We've also seen an interesting example with OniForce. Hasn't really played out in its entirety yet. What do you think of this?
Last comment on this. I see Klon, who was the
cool original
artist of Cool Cats, tweeting about it. So clearly... he respects the art. Clearly I was out of touch. If like there's some legitimate artist here that's associated with it, then maybe that's like a bullish thing associated with it. I just don't know what happened, what's been going on with this project. Like, has literally anything happened in the past like 6 to 12 months? And what the upside of this is. Clearly there's a community. I mean, they keep retweeting people that are following it and engaging with it. But it doesn't seem like there's insane engagement with this community here. I haven't hopped in their Discord, but I think the main value is that if someone wants to I don't know. I could see there being someone wanting to do merch or other things. I'm looking at the merch that got printed here, and it actually is not bad. It does have a Cool Cats vibe. Maybe someone wants to do something like basic with it. It also could have been a community member, and it could have also not been for a lot of money.
That's I mean, some of these things, I think if it was like a $50,000 acquisition, even that's too much. And the people that made it would take it no matter what, because it's like, it's just more money than they were making. Thanks for the insight, Nick. Or Signal, anything to add on this before we move on?
I feel like there's one thing Nick hasn't said, and it's, this is absolute trash. I was really surprised you didn't put that in your commentary, Nick. I mean, I'm not one just to throw out that line normally, but like, I haven't heard anyone talk about lemons in the last 6 to 12 months. I don't know why, like, even 50,000 feels just overpriced. Like you have 50,000, someone gives you 50 grand. Are you going to go buy a PFP project from 2021 that really doesn't have much of a track record in the space or a strong community? Because I remember even when Pudgies, before Luka bought it, I would see the Pudgies on the timeline all the time. You still knew they were active. It was still a community that, even though the floor price wasn't as high as it used to be, there was very, very strong engagement. Whilst personally on my timeline, I haven't seen any lemons coming out with threads or, you know, just how great their community is. So I find this a bit of a sort of like an anomaly. But I do think as a trend, we will continue to see this. Founders who want to exit. There's plenty of projects out there now, well-known ones, which, you know, behind the scenes are having conversations to, you know, exchange hands and do deals. So I think this will be an ongoing trend. We'll see this at the high level, the middle level, and the low level. So look, good deal to the founders if they can get out, and good luck to the people who've acquired it as an asset. I think you're probably going to have to wait quite a while to see positive ROI on this. If the lemonade gang want to come at me in Twitter comments, go for it. Change my mind on this. I'm cute. Like, I want to hear the other side of why this is a good acquisition. So if people can tell me, please tell me, because I would love to know.
Signal said, come at me, bro, to the Little Lemons community.
She said, come at me. Y'all suck.
Oh,
y'all suck. And your art sucks.
Okay. All right.
That's what she said. I'm just quoting her.
I am really, I don't know what it was. I didn't have a massage this weekend. Definitely not one like Nick had, but I'm on the same page as Nick that, like, out of all the PFP collections and out of all the art out there, I wouldn't give this one like, you know, a star for trying. It would like get ranked a lot lower. And I think there's better art out there, which you probably could have got with a stronger community and probably even got at a better price.
Well, there you go. Look, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to move on to another topic real quick. I want to take another pause here and just shout out the sponsor of today's show, Tensor. Tensor being the number one NFT marketplace by volume on Solana, and it's designed for both advanced traders and retail collectors, both sides of the market. It's backed by crypto heavyweights like Placeholder, Solana Ventures, Alliance DAO, and Solana's co-founders, Anatoly and Raj. And really, the vision is to unleash Solana's NFT potential, which if you hear us talk about Solana at the Nifty, we fully believe in. The NFT collection is dropping today, the Tensorians collection. And with this...
Tensorians.
There we go. That's right. That's right. With this, the goal is to create deeper connections with the community beyond the trading platform and establish themselves as a long-lasting brand in the Solana ecosystem. With Tensorians in your wallet, what will happen is you'll unlock premium access to Tensor's pro trading product. It'll offer profile customizations, unique rewards, and exclusive chats with fellow traders. The pixel art is crafted by talented pixel artist Zen Zero, adding a touch of creativity and flair to your NFT collection. So check out Tensor. We're going to talk to the team in just a little bit. Very exciting to have them sponsoring the show today. Nick?
Yeah, the thing I was going to say, Tensor, I noticed when you go on Magic Eating, I was looking at some of the Bodagos, that when you go to the details on it, it'll say listed on Tensor. So I feel like Magic Eden is essentially, you're actually transacting on Tensor when you're transacting on Magic Eden. Am I right about this, EZ? That like they pick up Tensor listed
items? Tensor does it as well. They both aggregate each other to show all listings just to make it more seamless. So like when you sweep, gives you a more cohesive floor. Tensor, yeah, I mean, it just provides a lot more as far as like the loyalty bonuses and stuff like that. With their season 3 now live, they just wrapped up season 2. It's just way more of like a trader and user friendly, in my opinion. Lets you do a little bit quicker volume and transacting on Tensor. I'm a big fan of them. They've iterated, really listened to the community, and continue to push updates based on community feedback. Their market making makes it really, really efficient to do a lot of really cool things there. So big fan of what they've been building. But yeah, almost all the marketplaces on Solana now aggregate, so it's not specific to one or the other.
Yeah, really pumped to talk to the team. Like I was talking about before, very exciting to have a super notable platform from Solana partnering with us on the show, hoping to do more stuff down the line with Tensor and the gang over there. Real quick, we got another topic for Nick, which is basically Doodles being on sprint mode. This month, they opened their in-real-life activation in collaboration with Camp. They dropped a partnership with Crocs that's going to go live. They have a new line of merch coming out. They have introduced the Doodles main character via new content formats. The CEO, Julian, said it was the result of over a year of business development and that their top of funnel is about to activate in a real way. Meanwhile, you know, floor price of the NFT collection is 1.53 ETH. What do you make of everything Doodles doing? Feels like there's some momentum there from a business perspective. Would love to get your take, Nick.
Well, the real question, so they had raised $54 million at a $700 million valuation. So let's first start with that in the context of how much capital they have. And they had also made, I think, nearly as much when they had sold Doodles. Like, they were one of the largest NFT drops. I don't remember how much revenue there was, but I feel like it was significant in the tens of millions of dollars when Doodles dropped. That was... Just the mint was one of the hottest mints, but they immediately...
0.123 ETH per mint in October 2021, so at the all-time high. So call it... Ethereum must have been at $4,500 at that time.
At least call it $3,500. So 45...
No, it was over 4 because it was literally that month the all-time high. So call it a 1,230 ETH haul. I'll go 41...
At least $5 million bucks. Yeah. So they had $5 million in primary. Secondary revenues were still a thing. So they had done like, I think, at least tens of millions of dollars in revenue plus $54 million in funding. When you think in terms of how much...
Plus the other mints, right? The box and all those were, there were a lot of paid mints. Anyway, go ahead.
I mean, if you put this in context, Yuga raised $450 million, which is just absolutely bonkers. So they are a behemoth in comparison. But still, $45 million is a substantial amount of money. It puts them alongside like Moonbirds as a comparable or proof. And I think that, well, look, it's good that they're executing.
Yes.
Some of the commentary that I've seen from them is like, y'all out here fading us. Some of the sort of like underdog mentality in terms of like them frustration over the FUD that they had received about their execution, which I just feel like is just a weird way to spin it. Yeah, you should be doing those things. The camp integration is awesome that they're doing that. They're developing real-world IP. It sounds like they have some other exciting things about to drop. I think the reality is their way of engaging with the community, they haven't followed the sort of build in public mentality is basically where the gap has been, and they haven't done micro milestones, as I would call it, where like there hasn't been any update, and they'll go months and months and months without them. So I think that that's like the biggest challenge that they have for them. I always see a bunch of negative tweets about them as well. And I don't know, like I'm no longer a holder. I think I sold this around the price that it's at, honestly, like 1.7 ETH. ETH was more expensive. Maybe it was higher. I don't know where I sold this, but I do recall it not being a major win for the doodle that I had purchased, but I always liked them. I just think that there's been a couple of issues, and I think the market didn't positively react to the stuff that they had done. The biggest releases that they had were the NFTs on another chain. They were getting really creative with how they were doing this dynamic.
Flow blockchain.
And no one likes Flow. But the stuff they were doing was kind of interesting and innovative, and I think it's I don't know. They're in this weird camp where like they are executing, but their floor price isn't benefiting. And I think that's kind of where they're sitting. Okay. It looks like I sold it for 6.4 ETH. Holla at your boy.
That's a good amount of money.
So that was it. But I was still down, I think, on whatever that was. But yeah, I sold it for 6.4. I bought it 1.4. Yo, your boy got a gain. Okay. So that was a big win. I remember people when I sold it at 6.4, they were like, it ain't going lower. This is a massive mistake. Like all the commenters at that point in time. Where are we at now? Where are we at now?
They're certainly not in the space anymore, and they 100%, 100,000% will not be coming back and admitting that they were wrong. One thing that I think is that I just think that Doodles, much like Moonbirds and much like some of the other notable NFT collections that were very popular during the 2021 and early 2022 bull run, there's a select few, right? It's like Moonbirds, Cool Cats, Doodles, and you know a couple other collections besides Bored Ape Yacht Club. I mean, they almost like, you know, obviously they benefited from that bull run because they made a tremendous amount of money in royalties. They had every opportunity in the world to close brand deals and do big time partnerships because of how popular they were in the space. But they're almost like victims of that success in the sense that the NFTs got caught up in a hype cycle of price speculation that had really nothing to do with, it's not like the doodles were doing things that directly correlated to the price. It's that there were only a select number of hyped up projects, like literally less than 10. And there was a ton of liquidity available that was looking for areas to deploy so they could deploy into a Moonbird, a Cool Cat, a Doodle, or like name one or two other things. And so these prices pumped to these astronomical, out of control levels. And what was the founder of Doodle supposed to do? Come out and say like, this price is too high for my asset and literally have everybody FUD them to hell. So it's like a damned if you do, damned if you don't. The price goes up so high, people buying the top for like $120,000 a Moonbird, or I don't know what the top was of Doodles, probably literally $100,000 or more, at least $50,000 or $60,000 per Doodle.
I think 50 to 60K. Yeah.
Okay. And then the rares are going for God knows how much, right? You got like a poop on the head doodle, or like a coffee cup on the head doodle, or whatever. That's just,
I don't think, did they have a poop on the head?
Well, one? A poopy has one with poop on the head. So I don't know if it's only him that has that or if there's others. But anyway, the bottom line is there were rare doodles selling for a lot of money. You know, the monkey doodle, right? Like, look at this, 270 Ethereum for that. 270.
Now, the Steve Aoki alien one was one of the wildest ones to see.
That was, I believe it's like second or third row. He bought like Pico top. That was like absolutely insane.
Yeah. So there you go. So you have all these prices, right? And then they roll out business execution now. I mean, in hindsight, right? What should they have done? They should have done every single possible brand deal that you could possibly do during that bull run to make as much revenue as possible, as long as it was a reputable brand. Probably just dumped as many free things to their holders as possible that weren't NFTs, like in real life stuff and things like that, just to deliver any sort of, you know, quote unquote value without diluting NFT supply and making the price of the NFTs go down. But the thing is, now it seems like they're absolutely crushing business execution, at least to some capacity, or at least they're doing like a base level of business execution. They should probably have an in real life office, things like that, because it sounds like they have the assets to be able to do that. But now, you know, the NFTs at 1.5 ETH, and it's like, do you run a business, or is your whole goal to make the price go up when it's unrealistic for you to get back to 70,000 a doodle unless there's a hype cycle? But the next hype cycle is going to have way more options, so the liquidity is going to spread out more, so it won't be as concentrated and get to that like 80,000 per NFT level because there are only five things to choose from. So look, it's a really tough spot to be in, and it's like, what do they even do, you know? So they're just trying to build a business that will satisfy their investors that gave them what, $60 million or however much Nick said, because those guys got to get paid out first. It's a tough spot, Nick.
I mean, I don't know if it is a tough spot. I think the tough spot is just like paying attention to commentary which says that your business sucks.
Yeah,
that's the only tough spot technically. Like, because they're not like, it's not like that has any impact on your ability to go execute. I think more importantly is like they have a decision as whether or not you want to entertain that audience or not. You can really choose. At this point, there's people that have capital and they give a shit about their floor price, or there's those people who don't. If their focus was on floor price growth, then
it would be higher than it is now.
Well, no, their focus, they would just be doing different activities.
Yes.
And some of those activities are completely meaningless bullshit. Like straight up, like some of those things are not going to matter 12 months from now when you're just focused on things that like build hype. You could go focus on investor relations, which I do think is important, which is whale relationship development. Unrelated to this, and I saw Sarah Scripp share this, was the PayPal stablecoin. Did you see this?
Yeah, USDPY just launched today.
And so this is PayPal issuing a dollar pegged stablecoin. Well, that is what a stablecoin is. Is there anything meaningful about this?
I think you look at Venmo and PayPal, which are owned by the same parent company. And Venmo has now been leaning way more into the crypto stuff, allowing you to actually purchase assets right through Venmo, because Cash App actually sees a decent amount of transactions on Bitcoin and other things from retail participants. And it's actually still continuing to ramp. So those are the things that I think are really interesting. And now to see PayPal do this, which also allows for some level of custodial wallet within that, they now have this stablecoin, which is free swaps back to currency to then be withdrawn. It's also a really interesting timing, considering there's a lot of rumors right now of Huobi being insolvent, one of the more popular Eastern exchanges. And
I think it's pronounced whoa boy.
Yeah, whoa boy, also potentially being in danger. But on top of that, there's other like rumors that Tron is just printing more cash without it being backed. Huobi and whoa boy was supposed to be backing their UST Tether 1-to-1. And there was massive outflows of Tether, with more Tether on the platform than supposedly backed. So it's crazy to see like some Tether FUD. We started to see some USDC FUD this weekend as well. And now PayPal dropping their stablecoin.
I mean, I feel like that's a bullish thing that they're launching this. With Tron just printing their stablecoin, that's a beautiful move, oh, dude. By the way.
Justin like, Sun just drops 300K US Tron randomly, and he's like, yeah, tomorrow we got another 300, baby. And there's no inflows.
And he's just printing money, basically. Like, that's like the best situation that he could have. The real, I don't know where you can buy it either. Where can you buy Tron's stablecoin?
KuCoin.
Okay. you spend a lot of time on there?
I mean, it is a notable exchange.
Yeah, and they give like fairly good leverage for like without needing to do like crazy KYC.
Basically, stablecoins have always been like the money printer hack. If you had nefarious intentions, and so that's always been like the question about Tether was the same thing. But I mean, I honestly think all of this just goes to a KYC version of the crypto like space to a large degree, for better or for worse. I mean, it kind of sucks, I guess, but like, who cares? Like, the only people that care are the people that are trying to like avoid
taxes.
Like paying taxes or having any sort, like, if you want to avoid paying taxes, crypto is not like the single best tool. To
laundromats are
like
be a drug dealer.
Think, like, you could go set up international bank accounts and things like that and try and funnel money all over the place. I feel like there's plenty of other ways to go.
You can open
up
a Costa Rican bank account with just a U.S. passport.
There you go. Well, look, it'll be interesting to see how this stable coin stuff plays out. I want to go now to an interview with our sponsor of today's show. We're very excited. Tensor is here, the number one NFT marketplace by volume on Solana, used by both advanced and retail collectors. We have Richard and Ilya from Tensor here to discuss the Tensorians drop and Tensor as a whole. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Hey, guys. Good to be here. Thanks for the warm intro.
Hell yeah.
Thanks, guys, for having us.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So, you know, I want to just kind of serve this up initially. You know, can you just explain to the audience what Tensor is? Obviously, a significant percentage of the audience is very familiar, but there may be people that have not used the platform, maybe people that aren't daily, you know, users of Solana's NFT ecosystem. Could you talk about Tensor as a platform, and then we'll get to the Tensorians drop?
Yeah, for sure. So Tensor is an NFT marketplace. I actually think you described it really well when you said that it's a marketplace that caters both to pros and retail. We started off pretty squarely in the realm of catering to pros. So our first product, for anybody who remembers it, looked very much like a Bloomberg terminal. And, you know, that had an appeal for a certain type of user. And then from there, we sort of diversified the platform, made it a bit more generic. And today, when you go in Tensor, there's basically two modes. You can go in the pro mode, and that gives you all the advanced charts and analytics and everything. And then you can go in the light mode, and that looks a lot more similar to traditional marketplaces.
Awesome. And Richard, anything to add on Tensor?
Yeah, I think one thing that you mentioned is that we're the number one marketplace right now in Solana by volume. We were backed by Placeholder. We're backed by Chris Bruniski. Some of you might know him from Twitter. He's a very, you know, he started off on Bitcoin, then moved to EVM, and now is starting to invest more into Solana. And we were sort of like one of his first Solana investments. I think he saw an interesting opportunity with NFTs, with Solana, and what a vibrant NFT community Solana has. And, you know, it's catching up to Ethereum. Hopefully we'll be on par eventually, but it's exciting to be building for a very thriving ecosystem, NFT ecosystem on Solana.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And you know, I kind of alluded to that earlier in the show. I have conversations with kind of the old guard of 2021 and 2022 Ethereum NFT participants, and also, you know, people that are running businesses in the space, and hearing their perspective is interesting. And I bring up everything that's happening on Solana, and a lot of them are just flat out unaware. They find it interesting. I don't know if they totally understand that there are that many, you know, quality builders on Solana right now, focused on their organizations, focused on their platforms right now, and which is, you know, again, why I was really excited to have you guys on. We're going to talk about the drop about Tensorians in just a sec. I wanted to talk about compressed NFTs, and I think Nick will probably be very interested in compressed NFTs. I talked to you two about this briefly on our call last week, but could you talk to us about, you know, compressed NFTs and what, you know, excites them about you, and maybe just how these might be integrated into Tensor?
Yeah, for sure. And actually, it's a really nice segue because, you know, you mentioned something there. You said, well, there's some people who just don't care about Solana. They're on Ethereum and they think like there's nothing happening on Solana. And to be honest, I don't blame them, because for a very long time, there wasn't a lot of new stuff happening on Solana. It was mainly copycats from Ethereum. It's what it is. But I think in the last sort of 6 to 12 months, it's really been this period when all the, you know, cheap copycats and non-believers have been washed out, because Solana obviously has gone through really bad times. And the only people that stayed are people who are genuinely interested in trying new ideas and building something that, as we call it, can only be done on Solana. And so compressed NFTs is just a great example of that. So what are compressed NFTs? Compressed NFTs are basically NFTs that you can mint in the millions and even billions for pennies. Specifically, it's going to cost you around $10,000 to mint a collection of 1 billion NFTs. And so that's really important, because in technology, it just so happens that when you can bring the cost of something down by a magnitude, you typically open up a new market that wasn't available before. This is basically what happened with rides and Uber Eats. Uber, the obviously the driving thing, and then with, you know, DoorDash and food delivery. And we think that something similar is going to happen with NFTs, where the first meta of NFTs that kind of really became popular was, you know, this idea of almost like luxury collectibles, where you'd have like small collections with few items in them, and you'd have a few very well-off buyers buying those items. But that doesn't scale to the world, because by definition, most of the world isn't well-off, isn't wealthy. And so what we think we're going to touch on here is a technology that allows us to scale NFTs to the masses, to the billions. And to give you guys some numbers, already today, so we already run a marketplace for compressed NFTs next to our normal marketplace for normal NFTs. And the compressed marketplace has seen more transactions in 2 months, over 1 million transactions, than the normal marketplace in its entire lifetime. That's telling you something. It's telling you that you're unlocking a new user segment that hasn't been active before. And like, we're seeing 20, 30, 40,000 wallets interact with this contract. And like all of those transactions, they're pennies. They're like a dollar here, a dollar there. And we're very excited about that. You would think like, why would we be excited about a dollar transaction? But we're excited because that's taking this awesome technology that we all love to the mass market, to billions of people's.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Nick's nodding his head right now on YouTube. I figured Nick would be, you know, thinking this is juicy given what we do on our platform. Nick, when I talked to the gang here at Tensor last week, they were like, yeah, you guys should like think about doing this compressed NFT stuff on Solana on your platform. I was like, yeah, I kind of feel like we should. But yeah, Nick, is this compressed NFT stuff interesting to you?
I mean, the thesis behind it, I think, is the bigger thing, which as he was just saying, in terms of like volume happening in the dollar range, that feels way more natural to me as the future of NFTs and where all the volume is going to exist. In terms of on-chain versus off-chain and what the experience is, we take an even more aggressive position that, or at least I definitively do. I think 90% plus, or 95% probably, of all NFT transaction volume is going to occur in custodial wallets and not actually via traditional wallets. I think compressed NFTs are really exciting in terms of growth for, Clemente has a chart pulled up in terms of what's happening here. Look, if you the more friction you reduce, the more activity that's going to occur. That's just the math associated with this. And this is just eliminating costs. So those that you don't have technical friction reduced, you have price friction removed. And I think from that standpoint, that already has a huge impact in terms of unlocking the market. And so it's an order of magnitude in terms of volume just on price. I think you see a similar order of magnitude of volume when you move towards custodial. Like the vast majority of, like, for example, Bitcoin transaction volume every day is people just trading on places like Coinbase. Like it's not happening on like Uniswap equivalents. I don't know what the Bitcoin equivalent of Uniswap would be, but most of it's not happening on decentralized marketplaces. which are actual on-chain transactions, which require wallets. I think all of it happens in places where it's going to be custodial. And simultaneously, if you're going to do it custodially, but you still want a corresponding on-chain transaction to occur, things like compressed NFTs are going to be the path to unlock that. The reason is like you still want a ledger of what happened at any given point. And that's where custodial transactions, they don't have that in the same way right now. If you go make a transaction of trading Bitcoin on Coinbase right now, there's not a corresponding on-chain transaction that occurs where you can see that like they're not just eating gas or whatever the equivalent is on different chains. I think compressed NFTs enables that to happen. And it moves us closer to the technology kind of being the infrastructure that's being used for the developers that are building. That's not to suggest that there's not going to be continued wallet transaction based like on-chain transactions from consumers, which is, in fact, we're like that chart that Clemente pulled up only validates that further. It's exciting. It's cool to see this going on. I think there's also some innovative programmatic aspects of it where you can do more dynamic NFT style stuff. And Solana is a platform where that is pretty common. It tends to be, as Easy says, ahead of the curve, ahead of Ethereum when it comes to a lot of those dynamics. And compressed NFTs is just one of those places. You know, last comment on this, and I'd love to throw it back to the team, is like, if you go look at the activity on OpenSea, for example, and you just look at most recent transactions, there's a period, and I don't know if it's still the case, where all that stuff is happening on Polygon. Now, OpenSea doesn't do a lot of Solana transactions, so it's not really relevant in that space. So you don't see a lot of the Solana transactions happening, but they do. They are the marketplace for a lot of the Polygon transactions that are occurring, and you see the vast majority of activities happening there. And that's because there was less gas, lower friction makes things easier. So I think we're still early in that flow, but it is really exciting the things that are being done here. And it enables people to trade these collectibles. I'm curious, and I don't know if the team here has any insight into it, the real volume of users, like the number of wallets where that activity is actually occurring. If it's among a small thing and as people are able to just sweep, or if instead we're seeing broader adoption take place as a result of this.
Yeah, I can probably take that point. I think what was interesting to us when we launched our compressed marketplace and we started working with creators and projects and platforms like Drip. Drip is basically doing this novel distribution platform where they're giving out free NFTs, kind of like what you guys are doing. So I guess in a way it's not necessarily novel, since I guess you guys started doing it before them. But what's interesting is that they're doing it all on chain with compressed NFTs. And so anyone can see these NFTs go out on the Solana blockchain and see, you know, how many wallets got these NFTs, who got these NFTs exactly. What's interesting is that when we started launching these compressed NFTs with Dripped, with Dialect, and a couple of other projects, we saw the number of daily active wallets on our platform shoot up like tenfold. And what was interesting is that these wallets, instead of coming primarily from the Western half of the world, they actually came from the Eastern half of the world, countries like Indonesia, countries like the Philippines, India. So I think what's incredible here is that we're seeing actually broader adoption from people who would have never touched NFTs, let's say on Ethereum, where gas fees might be $5-$10, you know, even in a bear market. But what's interesting is that they're starting to experiment with these compressed NFTs because transactions are less than a cent, right? They're a fraction of a penny. And, you know, they're not, you know, spending what is quite a lot to them, you know, $5-$10 every time they do a transaction. Now they're spending a fraction of a penny doing these transactions. And I think, like, you know, this is what gets us excited about compressed NFTs in Solana, is that potentially for the first time we're seeing mass adoption, like global adoption, where people who are not in a more, you know, high cost of living, high welfare state can actually start entering this ecosystem, start experimenting with NFTs and participating in, you know, everything that we're doing here with, you know, the existing meta of NFTs. I think to your earlier point on custodial versus compressed NFTs, I think like the analogy there is totally right. I think like both custodial and compressed NFTs offer that magnitude decrease in cost. What's nice about like compressed NFTs compared to custodial NFTs is that, like you said, there's actually a public ledger of what's going on. And so anyone can compose on that activity. So if I wanted to build a project on top of an NFT project, I don't have to ask Coinbase, you know, who would keep maybe all of these transactions. Or I guess a better analogy or a better example would be like OpenSea, if they decide to do everything custodially. Like I wouldn't have to ask OpenSea to give me that ledger. I could just ping like the Solana blockchain and be able to see the entire ledger on chain, and anyone could do that permissionlessly. But I do think that there is a place for both custodial and compressed NFTs. They just both offer, you know, unique advantages over the other.
I mean, it's juicy. I love, you know, just hearing about the technological advancement. I want to definitely talk about Tensorians. Nick, was there anything to add on what Richard said about compressed NFTs or custodial or anything like that?
There always is, but I'll save it for later.
When we talk Tensorians, that's where I'm getting extra excited. So this is a near free mint. This is a collection by a platform that, you know, the majority of the Solana community, if not the entire Solana community as well, you know, very, very much so, you know, aware of. Clemente has the Tensorians guide pulled up on screen right now. What's the story here with the Tensorians, gentlemen?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? I think I'm actually going to start with this, which is now that we're doing this mint, I think we're really understanding what it is like to be an NFT project. When you're a marketplace working with NFT projects, your impression is actually something else. But now that we're actually doing it, let me tell you, it's a lot harder, and there's a lot more that goes into it than you would think.
Tell me about it.
So I guess Tensorians, right? Basically, we felt that because our audience is so NFT native, it would only be fair for us to explore the different sides of NFTs and how we ourselves, as a Web3 native product, could use NFTs to both grow our audience and benefit our holders. And so we decided that the first kind of serious rewards drop that we're doing is going to be NFTs. And basically the way people, so in order for you to get a Tensorian, you had to have been farming points on Tensor or basically doing listing, bidding, and market making for a while, for probably about 5 months. And in return, you got a bunch of shards. And these shards, they're almost like a whitelist to get these NFTs. We made them tradable so that anybody who doesn't want them can sell them and anybody who maybe didn't get them can buy them. But the obviously exciting part is that we made them compressed NFTs. So there's 100,000 of them. We minted all of them. We completely fronted the cost and we airdropped all of them to our users. And so they're completely in the open right now. You could go and buy them right this second if you wanted to. And then the mint is going to be burning those shards in order to actually mint one of the Tensorians. And that's going to be happening today. 10 shards plus 1.69 soul for the culture equals one Tensorian. So that's kind of the idea behind it. Richard, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I think this is what you said earlier about us doing an NFT project really teaches us what it's like to actually run or create an NFT project. And I think like in hindsight, like you could argue that maybe we shouldn't have wasted time doing this NFT project and we should have just built features, you know, made the product better, and eventually, you know, build out other verticals besides the marketplace. But I think like the silver lining here and actually what might have worked out is that now we can empathize with all the NFT projects that we've worked with in the past and the struggle that they go through, like leading up to the mint, pre-mint, during the mint, and post-mint. I think we would have never understood exactly what these NFT projects are going through, what these NFT founders are going through, unless we had launched this NFT project. And for us, like, you know, when we go to an NFT project, or if you're an aspiring NFT project on Solana and you're thinking about launching and partnering with a marketplace, would you rather work with a marketplace that has gone through the experience end to end, gone through the experience of, you know, trying to generate hype for the project, trying to get attention, actually doing the tech for launching the NFT and everything post mint, or would you work with, you know, a marketplace that didn't do that? I think the answer is more clear now that, you know, Tensor has launched an NFT collection, that we know a lot of things that come up when you're trying to run an NFT project that could be useful to all of these projects.
Absolutely. And you definitely deepen your community in the process too. So what you guys will see as soon as, you know, you see these Tensorian profile pictures getting rocked on Twitter, Discord, and other platforms is just the strength of community that comes along with doing a drop like this. So I'm excited for you guys. I think it's going to be super cool. So owning a Tensorian gives you premium access to the pro trading product. There's over 100,000 monthly active traders on that. There's profile customization that you can get. You can get faster access to new features, unique rewards, and exclusive chats with other traders. Anything I'm missing here? Anything else, you know, Tensorian related that people should know? When can they, you know, burn their shards? Like, what's the story here?
Yep. So I think there's two questions there. In terms of burning their shards and minting in Tensorian, that's going to happen today, or it's going to start today, and then the mint is going to be open for a month. In terms of what holding a Tensorian gives you, it's pretty much what you said. I think that's a very good overview. But like, honestly, here's a really simple analogy. Here's how to think about it. You walk into a Porsche dealership because you want to get a really fast car. And like, all the base models are there and they're fast and they're great and they're better than, you know, like almost all other cars out there. And that's Tensor as it is. You can get the base model. It's going to be super fast and you can drive it and have fun. But if you wanted to get a little bit extra, you wanted that special leather, you wanted those custom rims, you wanted that special paint job, then you get a Tensorian. And of course, like, as we're building out the product, as we're thinking about how do we make this product as good as we possibly can, we're constantly going to be asking the question of like, hey, what can we do for Tensorians? Because those are our most dedicated supporters. Those are the guys that will go to war for us. And so like, really, this is the best way to put it. What are you getting when you're buying a Tensorian? Well, you're joining a cult, right? And it's, we think it's the coolest fucking cult in Web3. And like, honestly, if you don't think so, you shouldn't be buying one. But if you do, then you're going to find your family here. And so, yeah, that's what it is.
I love it. The cult pitch, Ilya. I love it. Obviously, that's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but at the same time, there's certainly some truth to that. Anything else people should know about, you know, Tensor, Tensorians, the drop, anything at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think to add on to that, what's special about Tensorians and what we're doing with the project and the platform itself is that we lean very heavily into innovation. Like, we're unafraid to dedicate a ton of engineering resources, a ton of our essentially contributors' time to figuring out, like, what is something that hasn't been done before in Web3? What is something that hasn't been done at all, like on Solana? And how can we build that and experiment with anything that we see as promising and could onboard the next million users? And if you're a Tensorian, if you're a Tensor user, you essentially get front row seats to all of that innovation, right? We're going to be spending a lot of our time trying to build out the infrastructure around compressed NFTs. There are a couple of things that we already planned that we're planning on doing with Tensorians. That will be a game changer. That has never been done before on Solana and maybe ever in Web3. And I think if you're interested in joining the ride of like rampant innovation and new things being built, and things that could potentially onboard a million more users into Web3, then you probably want to join Tensor and join the cult and become part of the journey.
Hell yeah. Well, it all sounds fantastic. We're really excited about Tensor and Tensorians, hoping that we can partner with you guys even deeper moving forward. Clemente's got our free NFT at thenifty.com in honor of today's partnership with Tensor. So if you go to thenifty.com/claim and you put in the code Tensor15, TENSOR15, you'll claim today's free NFT, again, in honor of the partnership with Tensor and Tensorians. The title of it is Tensorian Dog. We got Buddy trading NFTs on Tensor. No surprise there. Looking like a proper Tensor or just a proper Solana NFT trader using the number one marketplace by volume. Anyway, Ilya, Richard, real pleasure having you guys on the show. Like I said, I hope we can do more with you guys moving forward. Really excited about the drop and the platform, and just to have the opportunity to partner with people that are actually focused on building, that aren't going anywhere, that are excited about what they're making on a blockchain that I would argue is the most exciting one for NFTs, at least in my humble opinion. Thank you guys for joining the show. Best of luck with Tensorians. I'm sure you don't need it, and there's going to be a lot of attention on it. But yeah, great speaking with you guys today.
Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure. Well,
thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, check out Tensor and Tensorians. Clemente's got pinned tweets at the top. Go to the nifty.com /claim and mint the free NFT Tensor 15. We got links in the description there too for all things Tensor and Tensorian related. That's our show. If it's your first time listening, we do the show Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. To 10:15-ish. I mean, we went long today. But anyway, it's Monday through Friday. It's available on YouTube. If you want to watch the video feed, make sure that you subscribe to the YouTube channel. All links are available in the NFT Morning Show Twitter account, which you should be following if you listen to this show. You can also share the show with people outside the Twitter bubble by sharing the Apple Podcast, Spotify Podcast links. It's available wherever you get your podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. One more shout out to Tensor and the Tensorians. It was a real pleasure learning about Tensor, compressed NFT, and all things Tensorians. Check out the drop. We will be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.